Duele mucho.
What you're hearing here is from a video shot on a cell phone. And if it sounds rough in more ways than one, well, that's because it is. This is sound from an outdoor hideout for homeless heroin users in New York City. It's big and full of trees, and everyone knows it's there, including the police. It's called The Hole.
All right.
The groaning is coming from a person in acute pain.
I need something to wrap it. What's going on? Yeah, that's pus. I need that out.
And that's Angie Camacho. She's not exactly a doctor. She's a professor at John Jay College in Manhattan, and she's an advocate for drug users. But here at The Hole, she's providing some very rudimentary medical care.
I need you to wipe in the side, baby. Come and wipe the pus out.
John Jay College has a collection of these videos. They show college students, instructors, and drug users milling around The Hole. This motley crew started coming out here a couple of years ago, bringing with them clean injection equipment, water, blankets, whatever they can get their hands on to ease these drug users' pain, and in some cases, keep them alive. One of the people in these videos is a thin man named Dino Fuentes.
In a span of half a block, I bought 7 different bags.
I didn't want to go.
Tino has been working since the 90s, helping drug users stay as healthy as possible. He works mostly with heroin users, and he's seen it all. He's prevented so many people from overdosing that he stopped counting at 75.
I've already done over 75 since 2006.
Of course, the opioid epidemic isn't limited to the South Bronx. More Americans died from drug overdoses in 2016 than during the entire Vietnam War. Since 1999, overdose deaths from opioids have quadrupled nationwide. And today, drugs are the leading cause of death for Americans under the age of 50. Although the whole country is now reeling from these deaths, for the Bronx, it's old news. And for this neighborhood, which is 90% Black and Latino, opioid deaths are something they've been living with since at least the 1960s, before there was all of this national attention that there is now, and with very little institutional support. Over the years, the Bronx has taken matters into its own hands and succeeded in reducing opioid-related deaths. But 3 years ago, something new happened. The drugs themselves started to change. From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, The Hole. On this podcast, we're going to bring you into the world of opioid addiction in the heart of a mostly Latino community in the South Bronx, where some people are keeping drug users alive by any means necessary, even if it means breaking the law to do it. We teamed up with two reporters, Stephanie Daniel and Michael O'Brien, who have been following Tino Fuentes and others in the Bronx for some time now. Stephanie and Michael pick up the story from here.
Exactly, because it's still that stigma, right? These people, right?
That's Tino Fuentes. That stigma he's referring to, he means it's toward the people who live in the South Bronx and inject heroin.
So it's not just for these people, it is for everybody.
He's Puerto Rican, born and raised in New York City. He's in his mid-50s, but with a scully cap and skinny jeans, he looks about a decade younger. His moves are quick and deliberate, like a featherweight boxer about to strike.
How would you describe yourself?
Me? I would describe myself as the best person in the world to know, your best friend. I'll help anybody. Like, I would literally give my last plate of food to somebody because I know I can come home and get another plate. Some people can't do that. I'll help anybody.
When Tino says anybody, he means anybody. It's mostly code for drug users. Tino brings them supplies, like clean needles and naloxone. And he trains them on how to use the drugs more safely, as in how to shoot up and hurt themselves less, so to speak.
For the past 20 years or so, way before the opioid crisis had a national focus, he does something you may have heard of as harm reduction.
When you drive a car, you put on a seatbelt, right? You're reducing the harm, right? Harm reduction fits in all aspects of your life, right? It just sounds ugly when it comes with drugs, you know? But yeah, you know, not judging people, you know, trying to keep people alive.
harm reduction techniques are sometimes controversial. Although the medical community incorporates some harm reduction to curb drug addiction, opponents say the practice enables drug use by being too lax on drug users, curving them of their responsibility, they say. And at the end of the day, abstinence is the goal in most programs, not harm reduction. It actually doesn't tell people to stop using drugs.
It's also inherently antagonistic to law enforcement, because street drugs are illegal, and harm reduction's methods sort of ignore this.
And as far as we can tell, harm reduction has a proven track record of keeping people alive. One well-known example of harm reduction is needle exchange. Back in 1990, half of the people in the city who shot up drugs had become infected with HIV. That's an estimated 100,000 people, including those who had died from the disease. And the South Bronx had the second highest rate of AIDS in the city, outside of Manhattan. So activists started showing up with clean needles to give to users in areas where they were known to shoot up. And the HIV rates actually went down. But even when the data showed that syringe exchange lowered HIV rates, needle exchange was still illegal in New York City. If you were caught passing out needles, you could be arrested.
But then in 1991, activists were dragged into court for openly distributing needles in Manhattan's Lower East Side. The judge presiding on the case said the HIV crisis warranted their actions. Not only were they off the hook, but that ruling made needle exchanges in the city legal for the first time. Needle exchanges are a lot more mainstream today, and most states have programs. But back then, as they started feeling that the city was ignoring those who needed more care, people who worked with addicts, they tapped into the DIY spirit and took to the streets to distribute needles and do whatever needed to be done. Harm reduction wasn't meant to be a movement, but now people that practice it handle it like it is. They live and breathe it, and they're also saving thousands of lives.
Last year, the state of New York released a report after collecting 2 decades worth of data on these needle exchanges. And before there were people in the streets handing out syringes, intravenous drug users made up half of all the new AIDS cases in the city. And now they only make up 3%. Needle exchange is the primary reason for that decline. There aren't any hard statistics on the results that harm reduction has had on overdose deaths, but it's impossible to deny that harm reduction plays a really important role in the community. For one thing, harm reduction advocates are the people that got naloxone out on the street. Naloxone is a drug that literally reverses an overdose.
In the 20 years that Tino's been working with harm reduction, tens of thousands of persons have been saved from overdose by naloxone. And many needle exchanges have blossomed into what can only be described as wellness centers. Some even have doctors that can provide medications to treat opioid addiction. So Tino has been working to help people basically not die from doing drugs. And for a while, he and the other harm reduction folks succeeded. But then something happened.
It started 3 years ago. All of a sudden, heroin overdose deaths are back up in the Bronx, like levels before needle exchange. And this time, the problem is with the supply, what's actually in the drugs. The heroin in the city now, it has fentanyl.
It's a powerful synthetic opioid, really powerful. Pound for pound, 50 to 100 times stronger than straight heroin. So when fentanyl gets cut in with a batch of street drugs, the heroin becomes more potent. And the problem? Most people don't know that what they are injecting is a much stronger drug. So people OD a lot more.
When it comes to fentanyl, Tino and his ilk are the first responders. The city launched a campaign to warn people about the dangers of fentanyl. But as far as everyone we talked to, people in the Bronx didn't actually see a lot of on-the-ground help. So Tino once again took matters into his own hands.
So at night they flash it. I mean, they put a cop car here.
Tino's here on an infamous corner, one of the biggest dope-buying spots in the South Bronx in the 90s. And he's doing something very illegal. Technically, he's training staff and drug users how to test heroin for fentanyl. But to test the heroin, he needs to get some first. Tino has to buy heroin, cook it, and test it.
This side, there's the blue part. Don't touch the bottom.
Okay.
Well, first you prepare your shot, right?
Right.
Draw your shot completely out of the cooker.
Right.
At like...
If this sounds sketchy to you, that's because it kind of is. But that's also kind of Tino's thing. He's not one that shies away from something just because it might be really, really illegal. He never has been.
Good people do, you know, bad things for whatever reason. I don't know, whatever, to feed their family, you know, to get straight on or whatever. Nobody deserves to die because they use drugs. And that's the pattern, you know.
This isn't Tino's first rodeo. He used to make his living selling heroin in New York City in the 80s and 90s.
Oh yeah, this is the best dope in the world. This is the best. Let them know. And it could have fentanyl on it, you know?
Tino grew up with drugs as part of the normal lexicon of life. He was raised by a single mom in East New York, a poor neighborhood in Brooklyn, without many opportunities for a Puerto Rican kid. So when Tino was about 11, he began dealing weed to make some cash. Then he sold heroin for decades. Drug dealing is a way to survive. And as Tino puts it, sometimes so is using drugs, which he's also seen a lot. Tino was 6 years old when he saw a relative shoot up heroin in the house.
I remember walking to the bathroom, you know, and my uncle's in the bathroom, you know, syringe dropped on the floor, just like slumped over, you know?
That uncle would eventually overdose and die. Tino didn't take this as a warning not to take drugs or even sell drugs. Heroin was just in the milieu of the neighborhood, a fact of life. Regardless, Tino says he's left with the memory that no one was there to help his uncle or get him treatment. His uncle dealt with his addiction alone. So he doesn't want this to happen to anyone else.
Drug users mean a lot to me, you know, and the way they're treated, you know. How's that thing like saying, you know, if I wait for you to do it, it's not going to get done, you know? I mean, so I do whatever I can. We're all advocates for one thing or another, right? You know, I do what I want to do. I help who I want to help. You know, I like to help the world, you know, but some things mean more to me than others, right?
So all of this institutional knowledge ultimately means that Tino knows where to buy a bag of heroin, which he needs to do in order to test it for fentanyl.
Let me get the fentanyl strips. So this is the strip itself. You open it up at the edges, it has a split in it, and you grab it by the blue side. Just give me a 1cc. I need one of the syringes that are loose.
Tino never overlooks an opportunity to show someone how to use a fentanyl testing strip. Tino got his hands on one of these little pH strips that are calibrated to detect traces of fentanyl. And then the testing starts. Here's how it works.
Well, first you prepare your shot, right?
Right.
Draw your shot completely out of the cooker.
Right.
While drugs are being prepared in a little metal cooker or a bottle cap, you just dip this pH strip.
Add like 10 drops of water into it.
Yep.
Then take the tip of that and sit it in.
You can even test the residue left in the cooker after drawing the drugs into the syringe. If there's any fentanyl in the heroin or whatever drug you're about to shoot up, the pH strip will let you know.
Now, you know, I know that they're putting, what's it called? The cocaine.
No, that's cross.
People take the fentanyl and make tea out of it, and drink it, OD, and die.
Because nobody's going to throw their bag of dope away, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you're sick, you're not going to throw it away.
No.
This is a deadly mix, regardless. It has fentanyl, it's a deadly mix. This has been tested. It has tested positive for fentanyl. So if you have no other choice and this is what you buy, you have to be very careful, okay? You want to know where you got it from, the brand.
He says 5 out of every 6 bags he tests are coming up with fentanyl in the South Bronx. I ran this number by the city's health department, and the number is possible. They believe that fentanyl is popping up everywhere in the drug supply.
Dealers nowadays are more concentrating more on making money, I believe, than anything else. And obviously, that's the key to, I mean, that's the point of it, making money, but not at the cost of someone's life.
And so fentanyl is so concentrated that if you end up with just a few more sprinkles of fentanyl in one batch, the heroin is now super deadly. Of course, heroin in general, without the fentanyl, can kill you. But according to the city's health department, it is this fentanyl that's driving the massive surge in overdose deaths over the last 2 years.
The New York Times also reported that deaths involving fentanyl and other synthetic opioids rose from 3,000 to more than 20,000 across the country in just 3 years. So this isn't just a New York problem. It's a problem that half the country is facing.
So anyway, Tino is basically okay doing something illegal, a.k.a. handling heroin to test it for fentanyl, all in the name of harm reduction.
You know, you can't wait for the law to change for you. You got to change the law. How do you change the law? You got to break a law. I'd rather get arrested than see somebody dead, you know?
And Tino's also trying to get to as many users as he can, especially when they can't get to him. Like the ones who are so hooked, that they can't come to a church or a meeting, the ones who end up under bridges or in houses, or in places like the one you heard earlier, places like The Hole.
My plan is to go down to The Hole, take some trips, and start testing what they have. See if I can get connected with the person who sells there. I mean, if anything else, then at least let people know.
Now armed with fentanyl testing strips, Tino is ready to break the law again and handle more drugs, this time at The Hole.
Coming up on Latino USA, Tino goes to The Hole.
I guess you could, like, shimmy through here.
Well, you can get through here and then maybe jump around there.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
You have access to the entire world of NPR with your smart speaker. Ask it to play NPR to check the news while you get ready for work or fix dinner. There's a new radio in your house, and it's easier than ever to listen to Morning Edition, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Latino USA, and more. Ask your smart speaker to play NPR.
Salto al mar y me mojo las alas. Veo venir mi pluma salada. Y en Maya, que me cuida la espalda. Es serpiente de ala emplumada. Como hiedra voy trepando tus paredes. Todo esclarece de aquí adentro.
Okay. We're back with reporters Stephanie Daniel and Michael O'Brien, and they're following a man named Tino Fuentes into a place called The Hole, which is in the Bronx.
Remember The Hole? That's the place where drug users hung out and lived, sort of hidden in plain sight. Think Amsterdam from The Wire, in the sense that it's a big space, police tend to look the other way, and people freely do drugs there. When Tino heard about The Hole, he saw it as an opportunity to reach a ton of people that needed to know about fentanyl all in one place.
Duele mucho. Cuídate, Mai.
I need something to wrap.
The Hole is in a sort of concrete ravine about 10 feet below the street. It's actually an abandoned train track, with even the rails long gone. The area is fenced off, and inside are mattresses, upended furniture, and piles of used needles. It's kind of hidden from the bustling of the everyday above.
So, how many needles do you think are here?
Maybe like 10,000, I guess. I don't know. Probably
that's it? 10,000 only?
Maybe, or hundreds of thousands, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe there's an awful lot of them.
Man, with orange caps.
People say this spot has been used as an open-air shooting gallery for up to 40 years. More than 100 people come through here on a regular basis. Sometimes to sleep, other times just to shoot up. 2 years ago, the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, he declared The Hole detrimental to both the city and its inhabitants. He sent police in an attempt to, quote, clean it up. Tino thinks this is all fishy.
All right, so that was the thing, the clearing this out, and the developer, my understanding was that the developer was going to build the prison for them. Take that property to build a prison for them. So that was the whole thing about getting it cleaned up too, you know? You want to clean it for the developer, and they're going to give you a prison, right?
To be fair, for a decade there have been plans to build a new station for the NYPD's 40th precinct at this very spot. But it wasn't until January 2016 that the city finally unveiled this new multi-million dollar design. This was about 4 months after Mayor de Blasio personally oversaw the city's shutdown of The Hole. This is Mayor de Blasio.
We're going to end this encampment. We're going to give people better options, safe havens, homeless shelters, drug treatment, mental health services. People should not be living out in the open on the streets of New York City. They should be someplace safe where they can get the care they need.
At the time, the mayor didn't mention plans for the new precinct. And that help he promised? Well, it never actually came through. At least that's what Tino said. It was only a couple months after that raid that The Hole was back up and running.
The Hole looks like an awful place to be. It isn't the sort of thing you'd want your city known for. But for better or for worse, a community has developed down here.
Tino's been helping the people down at The Hole since the spring of 2015. Then a year and a half later, he teamed up with the John Jay crew. He wanted to full-on bring services to the hole, and specifically, fentanyl strips.
But then, last May, the New York Daily News featured the hole in a series called Opioid Nation. Within 72 hours, bulldozers showed up.
The busted gates to what addicts call the hole are now sealed. But have we seen the last of drug activity?
The virtual walls of the hole came down in a cloud of dust, rock, and old needles.
While the hole is set pretty far back off the street, it doesn't take too much looking around before you can find a used syringe on the sidewalk. And there's a school across the street. This is the second time the city has cleared the hole.
But this didn't stop Tino. After all, the hole had popped back up once, so why wouldn't this happen again? So he wanted to go and check out the area, see if anyone had snuck back in.
So we went with him. We hunted for a place to get in.
I guess you could, like, shimmy through here. Probably wouldn't be.
Well, then the problem is, right? I mean, to get down there, you see, well, you can get through here and then maybe jump through down there. Look how high that wall is, right?
It looked pretty dead and also pretty dangerous to sneak in this way. We came around the corner to where the entrance used to be. Now there's a cop car and floodlights.
And then, so the whole reason they also put, you know, like the fencing and everything is so they can easily arrest you for trespassing, right? You can't say, oh, well, there was a little opening there, so I thought I could. No, it's private property. I think they also put up signs, I'm not sure.
Is this private property? Or is it
the signs say, property of the NYPD. We go towards the cops.
And you want to go in there and introduce yourself as a reporter? And maybe you see the letters in? If I talk, you know, we might have an issue.
Yeah.
They're in the car. Hey. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
The officers were friendly enough, but they weren't really into being taped.
I'm a reporter working on a story for NPR.
They didn't have too much to say about the hole.
It was actually about
just
the hole.
That it had been there for a long time, and now it was gone. They seemed bemused that we were even interested in the place. We asked them if we could hop the fence and maybe take a tour.
In, or can we actually tour it and...
Torrent?
Yeah, us, like to go through. I mean, I remember what it was like before. It was full of syringes.
They weren't too into that idea. We'd have to set that up with the city beforehand, they said. And since they were blocking the only way in that didn't involve breaking our necks, we didn't really have much more to say.
All right, fella, thank you.
Cheers.
I appreciate it.
All right. But we only take a few steps before he starts to vent.
This is a whole waste of money. It's not going to accomplish anything. It's just going to displace more people, create more opportunities for people to die, you know?
When we were talking to the officers, I'd asked one of them if he had any naloxone on him, the opioid overdose reversal drug. He said no, but he had been trained to use it. I asked him if any other patrolmen carried it, and he said, yeah, he knew other cops who'd been issued it. But he also said that a lot of them forget it, leave it in their locker. You know, there's a lot of stuff they're expected to carry, and this is just another thing. The NYPD's response to this? They said that naloxone is carried on a voluntary basis.
Tino and his comrades at John Jay were utterly disappointed by what happened at the hole. As they see it, they just started to reach this extremely vulnerable population, and the administration displaced them. Now that the hole is closed, again, Tino and the John Jay folks want to make sure the invisible become visible by creating a survey to gather data about heroin users and what services they need from the city. So they're stationed at an intersection around the corner from the hole, talking to heroin users. You'll hear Rick, one of Tino's colleagues who heads up the John Jay team.
How many people do you know who have overdosed in the last 12 months?
Probably like 3 or 4.
When was the last time you overdosed?
Like a few weeks ago.
In the last 30.
The reason the survey is taking place near the hole is because Rick and Tino want to talk to the former residents.
As dirty as the hole was, you always at least had somebody there, right? You know, if you overdose, you know. Like right after they raided, there was a fire in the Bronx, not too far from there. It was an abandoned house and 2 people had overdose in there. So I don't know if these 2 people were people that hanged out in the hole or not. And whether they were or not, though, I mean, that's where you push people to go, to places where they can't get saved if they overdose. That's what pissed me off the most.
When Tino first started using the testing strips back in January of last year, the health department didn't approve. Some of the other needle exchanges wanted to do this, but feared legal repercussions. By June of that year, the city was calling on some of those same centers and giving them unofficial approval to start using the strips.
Today, Tino is traveling to places like Pennsylvania, California, and even Ireland, all to teach people how to test for fentanyl.
Harm reduction practitioners like Tino pioneered methods of care that keep drug users healthy and alive. Now cities around the country, Seattle, Denver, Baltimore, and others, want to take this ethos a step further. Supervised injection facilities for users of heroin and other injectable drugs to get high safely. People can also get medical care, sterile injection equipment, and treatment referrals. Vancouver has had safe injection for more than 10 years, and in their facilities, not one person has died of an overdose. And this is the one city in the world hardest hit by fentanyl. This is harm reduction at its raw essence, and also most controversial. Opponents say these sites enable drug use, but it looks like safe injection programs could be coming to the states. While a bill to bring safe injection to California failed last year, Seattle has announced that it has allocated funds to start a safe injection program. And just this January, Philadelphia announced its intention to go with safe injection as well. Tino, along with a coalition of harm reduction and needle exchange activists, has been part of the fight to bring safe injection to New York. And it looks like that fight might pay off. There's a bill right now in the state assembly, and there are reports that New York City itself may go ahead and start allowing safe injection sites. The NYPD and the Department of Health are discussing the implications right now. There are also rumors that the mayor is in talks with the governor to turn some of the city's needle exchanges into official safe injection sites.
We've put together some resources for anyone struggling with opioid addiction on our website, latinousa.org. The Whole was reported by Stephanie Daniel and Michael O'Brien. It was produced by Andres Caballero and edited by Nadia Raymond. The reporting you heard here was supported by a grant from the Marguerite Casey Foundation and a fellowship from the Ground Truth Project. Thanks to the John Jay College of Criminal Justice's Department of Anthropology, Joaquin Kotler and Isaac Kestenbaum. The Latino USA team includes Marlon Bishop, Fernanda Chavarri, Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoka, Jeannie Montalvo, Sayer Quevedo, and Maggie Freeling. Our interns are Reese Williams and Stephanie Cano. Our engineer and music editor is Cornelius McMoyler. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. If you like the music that you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, you can find us on all of your social media. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, creating a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. By funds granted from the Charles H. Revson Foundation. The statements made and views expressed, however, are solely the responsibility of the author. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of a culture of health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, we answer the burning question, do Latinos cry more? And Jaime Camil gives us a lesson on how to cry on camera.
And then on the fourth deep breath, you open your eyelids very slowly and then do not blink.
That's next time on Latino USA.
Love trivia, puzzles, nerdy games, and humor? What about interviews with actors, musicians, and people from all walks of life? Yeah? Then join me, Ophira Eisenberg, host of NPR's Ask Me Another, every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.